Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Looks Like Laurie, Sounds Like Laurie is one of the scariest films of the year, but it's not a horror movie. It's a loving documentary, a true story of a devastating decline. The subject is Laurie Sachs, a lively actor and mother who in her mid-40s started struggling to speak. Her quick deterioration from a form of dementia affects everyone around her, family, caretakers, and a large group of friends who stand by her during the worst. That group included filmmakers Pamela Hogan and Connie Schulman. Laurie Sachs agreed to have them follow her, resulting in this poignant film.
Jar, helmet, crayon, lamp.
She can't articulate what she's going through, so I don't know how she feels about what she's going through.
Looks Like Laurie, Sounds Like Laurie will be screened Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Linda in Albany. Schulman is probably best known these days as Yoga Jones on Orange is the New Black, but she's been working on stage and screen for 25 years, including roles in Fried Green Tomatoes, Reversal of Fortune, and Steel Magnolias. If you're like me, though, Schulman earned a lifetime of street cred as Patty Mayonnaise on Nickelodeon's Doug. Connie Schulman, welcome to the Roundtable.
That was so sweet. Thank you.
Tell me about your friendship with Laurie. How did you meet and how did you two get along?
I met Laurie when our daughters were in kindergarten. And I had seen Laurie previously for many years because we have older kids that went to the same school, but she and I just never ran in the same circles. And so I never knew her personally, but I knew her peripherally. And that's important for this reason. The years that I saw her from a distance, she was a vital sort of center of the group woman, alive, keeping people in stitches. Like, I could see who she was. And she was one of those people that you wish you were friends with, but it just didn't happen at that point. So fast forward 3 years, I guess, 3 or 4 years. And our daughters started kindergarten together, and they became, you know, fast best friends. Due to the nature of that and their young age, mommies plan play dates, and it becomes sort of like four best friends because you become very good friends with the mother as your daughters are, you know, playing together. And I guess a red flag should have gone up pretty quickly. But as I told you earlier, I had seen Laurie, a very vital person, from a distance many years earlier. So that was my context for her. Her daughter, Tally, was arranging the play dates. What would normally have been a mommy thing to do, Tally was sort of, at 5 years old, arranging them with me and my daughter. And but I just thought, you know, she's a precocious kid. And so the first time they came over to our house, Laurie, of course, was with her, and she was not really saying anything. And I thought, wow, you know, this is the woman I had seen was a talker and a laugher and a storyteller and all of these things. And she wasn't saying very much, and she was smiling a lot, but I was doing all the work. She wasn't asking me anything, and there was like no spontaneity, I guess I would say. And this went on for 10 months. Sometimes I might get a little bit more from her. Sometimes I wouldn't get very much. But she always accompanied her daughter to our house. So what seemed to me like was someone that just wasn't interested in me and didn't really care about our developing a friendship, she still came all the time. And it was, so it was, there were a lot of mixed messages. I began probably once I sort of got off that it was me, that there was something she didn't like about me, I started thinking there was something wrong with her. And it ran from she was on medication maybe, or she was depressed, or she had a stroke, or she drank. I don't know. It was, that's where I went in my head.
Well, once you found out that it was indeed a scary medical issue, Right. How did you and the other filmmakers and Lori herself decide to go ahead and start to film and document what was going on with her?
As soon as I found out there was a neurological situation that they were looking into, I sort of made myself available to the family. I got to know her husband, Eric, and, you know, what does a friend do? You look out for their daughter, who I was very happy to do, and I wanted to help with Lori as much as I could. So I asked Eric, and Eric said, you know, keep her as stimulated as you can, engaged in the world. He had mentioned to me about writing a book with her. She had written a memoir many years earlier, and I was in the process of writing a book, and he thought maybe if we wrote together, which was impossible at that point in her situation because she had developed, I guess, what they called expressive aphasia, where she was not able to express herself. She knew what she wanted to say, or she had these thoughts, but she was unable to get them out. So writing sort of went out the window. And then my husband, actually, who's an actor, came up with the idea basically saying, look, you know, Lori was an actress. She's a storyteller. What if you documented what was going on with her and followed her around with a camera? So I took her to lunch with another girlfriend and broached the idea to Lori, who we were like upstairs at Fairway Cafe. We're talking. I'm trying to sort of keep her engaged because having lunch or sitting down with her anywhere was like entertaining a child at that point. And I, you know, expressed my hope that we could document a film about what was going on with her and follow her day to day. And she took her phone out and her little date book and searched a number and called it. And I'm not even sure whether she said something on the other line to whoever she was calling. She handed me the phone, and on the other end was Pam Hogan, who was a very good friend of Lori's and knew how to make film. And so Lori, in her, I don't know, bad circuiting that was going on, could put all of this together in a very quick time. So her mind at that point was as sharp as ever. Her expression of those thoughts and what she was doing was limited. So she put the two of us together. Pam knew how to make a film, and I knew how to tell a story. And I was also going to be in Lori's life because of our daughters.
I have to say, it's impossible to watch the film without having a, you know, there but for the grace of God go I reaction to it, because she's so young and in the prime of life, and the decline is very steep. And I wonder if this experience, being a friend of hers and also making the film, has changed how you look at life at all, or how you live now.
Well, yes, I mean, Of course. I mean, I guess, you know, from the moment you have a child, and I have two, your life is forever changed for the better. I mean, my daughter asked me the other day, when do you grow up? And I said, when you take care of somebody and that person comes before you. And I think spending that year with Lori, I like to say I had 3 years with Lori. The first year was getting to know her. The second year was watching her disappear. And the third year was watching her die. And in her very short time with me, I realized that underneath all this, I don't know, everything that we carry around with us, there is an essence of the true essence of somebody. And Lori was sort of stripped down just to that. And because everything else was sort of disappearing in front of our eyes, but not the core of who she was. And I guess I sort of, what did I learn in the process? Well, one, you can become friends with somebody under the most limiting and challenging situations, but that there's a core of all of us that's underneath that this particular disease couldn't take away when it was taking everything else away. She still knew a good laugh, knew how to laugh, knew a good laugh when one came to her. And I think she was sort of a sad, happy clown. To me, that's who she was.
We're speaking with filmmaker and actor Connie Shulman about the movie Looks Like Lori, Sounds Like Lori, which is screening at 8 o'clock Saturday at the Linda in Albany. Shulman is best known for her work on Orange is the New Black, but if you're around my age, you might have grown up with her voice on Nickelodeon's Doug. She played Patty Mayonnaise.
What's become of the group of friends who are all affected by this illness in different ways? It's about Lori, but it's also about the effect of this disease on this wide group of women who are all really good friends with mm-hmm. Lori. And I'm wondering what's happened to that group after Lori's death.
Like women do, like hens, you gather and do what you need to do to help someone, which is what we all did. I knew Nelsie, who was a friend of hers, and of course I knew Pam because of Making It, but the other friends of Lori's, I didn't know. And when she, after she died, I would say that all of us needed to separate. You see in each other the very challenging year that we all went through together, and it's almost like you need a breather and not to necessarily be reminded of that time. So I sort of got out of contact with Eric, who I'd spent, 3 years with, almost 3 years with intensely. And even Pam and I sort of went our separate ways for a while. I think, you know, you're making this film about something that's happening, and it's all so intense and sort of hot, and you need to cool off and regroup and breathe. So we all, I think we sort of, all of our friendships, it's almost like our job was done, and we needed to take in what had happened. And when the film screened on America Reframed, we all sort of came out of hiding, I guess. I mean, Pam and I had started reworking on the film, but the rest of us sort of came out and touched base. And, you know, I think Lori was the reason we were all together. And when that person is not there, or your reason that kept you together, we'll never forget that connection and that bond, I guess, that we had through her. But it was actually kind of painful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we separated. And I also think to give Eric, Lori's husband, breathing space and permission to start a new journey in his life, he probably didn't need us hovering, which I'm sure partly we wanted to do to check in to make sure he was okay, but I think sometimes you just need your space.
How did you decide what would be okay to film, what to leave in, what to leave out? Because as painful as the movie is, I'm sure there were times where, you know, as viewers, we didn't even see how bad things got in some cases.
Right. Well, I mean, one thing that Pam and I decided early on was that when we felt like Lori was not steering the ship, we would stop shooting. Meaning that that we would know when she was ready for us to stop, because she would not be aware or present or part of the plan. And so that was an agreement we had made early on. I think that probably the footage that would be the most sensitive, that especially Pam in the editing room, felt like was very potent to the material, but too sensitive for her to put in would be the material with Tally and her mother. So I think some of that was left out, probably to preserve Tally, you know, so that, I don't know, to be sensitive to their relationship, and this is a little girl, and not wanting to her experience something later in life that made her feel bad about her own role as a daughter, because, you know, she was trying to figure out what was going on as a six-year-old. So I think, if anything, there was material that was sort of edited to sort of preserve the sensitivity to that relationship. And, you know, there's a footage of one of the caretakers. Lori had, I believe, three caretakers. And we kept Marilyn's footage in there, and she was her first caretaker. And I think she actually says, you know, her friends didn't really see how bad the situation had gotten because we didn't spend all day with her. You know, we would come and shoot with her for a couple hours a day until we felt like she was getting tired. And, you know, it's a big difference shooting with somebody several hours a day or at a certain event that we knew was coming up than to be with that person 24 hours a day. So whether there was footage that was let out because of it was too hard to watch, I don't think so. I think we didn't actually see a lot of that.
It's not obviously an uplifting film, but I have to say, and you deserve credit for this on multiple fronts, the little girls in the movie are amazingly precocious and human. And I think the fact that that's how you end the movie is really striking.
Well, Gus is my daughter.
Yeah, congratulations on having such a well-spoken daughter.
Yeah, I think Gus's sort of role in it came later, actually towards the end of the film, because I think Pam and I wanted to capture sort of Tally's take on what was going on, but didn't want to put Tally through that. And I think I probably suggested, well, Gus is very aware of what's going on because I'm aware of what's going on, and I talk and I share it with her. So we decided to ask her a lot of the questions that maybe we would have wanted Tally to answer but knew we couldn't go there. And I remember that day like it was yesterday. We were in her room, and she was in front of her dollhouse, and I sat on the floor with her, and Pam was kind of behind her up on the bed and said, you know, don't look at me, but I'm going to ask you some questions, and you just talk to your mother.
Everybody keeps asking it to Tally, like, what's up with your mom? And I tried to push it out of the way, the subject, so she wouldn't have to talk about it. And that's all I can do.
After she had answered a lot of the questions, just thought, oh, well, there's the heart of our film right there, because she just cut to the chase about what friendship is and what this experience meant. And, you know, it was beautiful. It was so beautiful. And I will just add this, because I had said that Pam and I had chosen to stop shooting when Lori was not commander of the ship. And we did put the cameras down. Many, many months later, one of her friends, Lois, approached us and said Lori wasn't somebody that would only tell part of a story, and she would want this whole story told, like the whole journey. And so we did bring the cameras to the facility where she had been moved to in Connecticut called the Greens, and we shot footage there, which is what you see at the end of the film. And I don't know whether we probably wouldn't have done that because we both had agreed we wouldn't go there, but her oldest friend sort of not only gave us permission to do that, but believed that's what Lori would have wanted. And that's why the footage at the end is there. It was going on 10 years ago. My daughter, Gus, is 16 now.
Oh, wow.
And I have looked at this film so many times over the years. And it's as vivid and present and pulls on your heartstrings as much now as it did then, because it's a universal story, and it's about frontal temporal dementia, and it's not about that. It's about, you know, how human beings help one another get through something. And I would say this, that I wish we had had this movie when we were all going through this with her.
The film is Looks Like Lori, Sounds Like Lori, and it's being presented by Upstate New York Women in Film and TV at the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, on Saturday at 8 o'clock with filmmakers Pamela Hogan and our guest Connie Schulman. It's just been a real pleasure to have a chance to ask you about the movie. I hope one day we can talk about Doug and have a lighter conversation.
Oh, sure. I'm glad that you know about Doug. And thank you for doing this, you know, getting the word out about this film. It's only going to help other people. And like I said, I wish we had had a film like this 10 years ago. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.